flowers are a great sign, you know, especially at this time of year. It's a sign of life. You know, I saw the first flowers of the season a couple of weeks ago when our neighbor's daffodils began to bloom. In fact, I think it was about 2 weeks ago on Sunday morning I saw them for the first time. But flowers are more than just a sign that spring has arrived and that summer is coming. Flowers are beautiful, but then again, the beauty of flowers isn't necessarily their primary purpose. Even if that's what we generally, what we typically use them for, both in a garden and in vases in our houses. Flowers' beauty is in part, at least in some plants, flowers are meant to attract pollinators. The bright colors along with the fragrance bring those pollinators in so that the pollen can be shared between flowers of the same variety within a certain vicinity. The flowers in some plant are meant for the production of fruits and seeds, and thus their purpose is reproduction. You know, some flowers are not only beautiful, but they're also edible, and I've heard even tasty. But most of the nutrients in plants aren't found in the flowers. They're found in the leaves and other parts of the plant. As followers of Christ, we're supposed to be a lot like flowers. Attractive. Like flowers, the point is not supposed to be about us, but it's about Jesus and us introducing people to Him. The writer of Hebrews makes this point very clearly as he tells us stories, at least stories in brief, of the early fathers of the Hebrew nation. In fact, we're going to look at Hebrews chapter 11 this morning, and it's a list that we know as the Hall of Faith. And when he does, he begins with Abel, and he goes up through the end of the book of Joshua. And then he simply says, well, I don't have space to tell you about all of the other great members of the family. According to the author of Hebrews, what made the men and women of old attractive is the same thing that will make us attractive. And that's what we want to look at this morning. How can we be attractive? And we find that in Hebrews chapter 11. And we're going to look at three sets of verses here this morning. And they're all three from Hebrews chapter 11. I just had to skip some of what's in between. The writer of Hebrews says, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the convictions of things not seen. For by it men of old gained approval. By faith we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God, so that what is seen has not been made out of things which are visible. And then skipping down to verse 6, he says, and without faith it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. And now down to verse 13, it says, for all these died in faith, without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance, and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country not of their own. And indeed, if they had been thinking of a country from which they went out, they would have had the opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. What does it look like? What does it take to be attractive? To be attractive, not the way the world talks about being attractive, but being attractive the way that God desires, the way that God created us as individuals and a church to be attractive. Just looking at what the writer of Hebrews says, we find that the first thing, or maybe the overarching thing that is necessary for us to become attractive to the world is faith. Now, the writer of Hebrews uses the Hebrew mindset to give us a definition of sorts of faith. You see, in Hebrew poetry, if you look at Hebrew poetry, they had a way of making a statement and emphasizing that statement. They would say what they wanted to say, and then they would slightly alter, maybe choosing synonyms of the word, the primary word, and some other ways of saying the same thing without completely repeating themselves. And we see it throughout the book of Psalms, over and over again. They have these two or three line statements where they simply repeat the same thing. Well, the writer of Hebrews has done no less, but he also gives us two different concepts of what faith is. And he says, first of all, faith is assurance. Faith is assurance. Now, we talk about being sure of things, and that's what the writer of Hebrews is saying. And the word that he uses is the Greek word hypostasis. It means to stand up underneath. It was a word that occasionally was used for a foundation of a building. It was used to say that something could stand in the pressure that was going on around it. And so the writer of Hebrews looks and he says, faith is having this steadfast mind, having this resolution of the things that we hope for. Now, we hope for a lot of things, but the writer of Hebrews has narrowed that down, and he's talking about the hope that we have in God. He says that faith is having this unshakable hope in what is to come. If we read through the book of Hebrews, the writer of Hebrews, while he is encouraging the church to stand firm in the face of challenges in this life, he's also writing, and if you read the whole, especially Hebrews chapter 11, we see that he's talking about, and we read that he says, that we are hoping for a home that is to come. We're hoping for a home, for a country, for a nation that is not bound to this earth, whose rulers are not of this world, whose strength and whose power isn't that of the world. He says that we're hoping for what is to come. And faith is having this steadfast mind that is what we will receive, that when the world around us begins to shake, when our lives feel like they're crumbling away beneath us, when things we thought we had under control are no longer under control, the writer of Hebrews says that we have a hope in what is to come. The other part of that definition of faith is that we have conviction in things that are unseen. We have this conviction that the Greek word here is, well, it means to have proof. But not just proof that you see, it's proof that's based upon an argument. We don't necessarily see the things that we are convicted of or that we have convictions in. But because of the arguments that we have, we can stand in those convictions. It means we didn't see what took place, but there is enough proof, there is enough evidence that we can base our life and we can put conviction in that truth. Next week we're going to celebrate the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And while I can't prove to you that Jesus Christ rose from the grave, because we weren't there, we don't have closed circuit television recordings of the moment that Jesus walked out of the grave, or the moment that the stone rolled away and the women looked in, or Peter and John got to the tomb and looked in and they found it empty. We don't have any of that. We only have the proof of their arguments. The things that they said, the things that they did, the way that it changed their lives and the way that it has changed the world. We don't have solid proof, but we have solid arguments that we can build our convictions on that say there is enough evidence and there is enough good evidence that what the early church said and what the early church believed is credible. You see, it's not blind acceptance. This conviction that the writer of Hebrews is talking about, it isn't blind acceptance of some things that somebody told us. Sometimes we build our lives on things that are nothing more than blind acceptance. But the writer of Hebrews says that we have proof and we have sound arguments to believe that God is who He says He is. And the writer of Hebrews says that we have to have faith, and then he tells us what we have to have faith in. We can have faith in a lot of things. You can have faith that the president is going to make life perfect, or the next president will make life perfect. You can have faith that your car is going to make it home today. You can have faith that if you eat healthy, you'll live a long life. And those are good, bad, I don't know. It depends. But those aren't the kinds of things that the writer of Hebrews is talking about having faith in. He's not talking about having hope and having conviction in what is unseen about the things of this world. Sometimes those things make great illustrations. I mean, after all, one of the things that we all have faith in, whether we think about it or not, is gravity. Because I don't see any of you wearing backpacks full of rocks around because you're afraid gravity is going to stop working somewhere in the middle of the day. We have some faith. But that's not what the writer of Hebrews is talking about. The writer of Hebrews, if we look at the argument, if we look at just what we read this morning, he's talking about a specific faith and a specific being. He says that we have faith that God is faithful. And more than just what we read, if you go back and you read all of Hebrews chapter 11, you find that the writer of Hebrews is making these statements, the three passages that we looked at, or parts of this passage that we looked at, he's making these statements, and then in between them and following the final one, what he does is he gives examples. He says, you want to see what faith is like? Let me show you. And he says, if you want to see what faith is supposed to be placed in, let me show you. And time and again, he tells us the story of those who have gone before, who have had lives that are marked by faithfulness. And the faithfulness of these men and these women is based upon God's faithfulness. You see, we can have faith in God's faithfulness. We can put our trust in God because He is trustworthy. And the writer of Hebrews shows us this. He shows us this by saying, look, God will follow through on what He asks you to do. And He tells us the stories. He tells us the stories over and over, new story after new story. And everyone is showing us that God will follow through on what He asks. One of the great ones of those that we can see is the story of Noah. The story of Noah. God said to Noah, Noah, build an ark, and after you get done, I will send you the animals, and then it will rain, and I will bring judgment. And Noah, only based on what he already knew of God, had faith in God's faithfulness. And Noah built an ark. And 100+ years later, after Noah had started building an ark, Noah finished the ark and the animals came 2 by 2. And they filled up the ark with a pair of every animal and 7 pairs of all the clean animals. And the ark was full and God closed the door and God sent the rains. And Noah proves God's faithfulness. And the writer of Hebrews is saying, look at this story. You can have faith in God because God is faithful. You can have assurance and you can have conviction in God and His workings because God has proven faithful. We can also have faith in God's faithfulness because He rewards those who seek Him. And if we look through the stories that the writer of Hebrews shares, we see this in the story of Enoch, because if you go back to the Old Testament, you read about Enoch, and what does it say about Enoch? It says that Enoch walked with God, and he was not. Now, if we were talking about that today, we might talk about the space aliens taking somebody up into their ship, but that's not what the scriptures say happened. The scriptures say that Enoch was faithful. Enoch believed God and God's faithfulness, and God took Enoch. Enoch was rewarded for his faithfulness with God. He was rewarded because he didn't have to see how evil the world continued to get, how corrupt and depraved man continued to get on the earth. And we also see this because we can have faith in God's faithfulness because of what happened. We can have faith in God's faithfulness because there is a better land coming. In fact, the writer of Hebrews says that if men like Abraham had been looking for a land here on earth, they could have found one, but they were not looking just for an earthly home, but they were looking forward to that home that God had promised for them. And we have that same faith, or can have that same faith in God's faithfulness, that He will do what He said He would do. We can also have faith in God because of God's power. And the writer of Hebrews throughout the book talks about having faith in God because of God's power. He talks about the fact that God raised Jesus from the dead. That Jesus Christ was dead and God raised Him back to life. And because we can look back and we can see that faithfulness on God's part, we can believe, we can have faith in God that He's going to do the other things He said He would do. We also have the fact that the writer of Hebrews says that that God created the heavens and the earth. We can see God's power in creation. We can see that God simply spoke the word and the heavens and the earth exist because of God's speaking. Therefore, we know that God will follow through on His promises. He has the power. He has the ability. And we look through the stories that the writer of Hebrews shares in the Hall of Faith. And time again, what we see is God following through on His promises. You go back to the story of Noah that I've already mentioned. And what do we see? We see God told Noah that the flood waters would come. That the animals would come to the ark. That God would save Noah and his family. And what takes place? Noah finishes building the ark. God brings the animals in pairs of two of the unclean animals and seven pairs of the clean animals. They enter the ark. God closes the door and the rain starts. God's power to do what God has said He would do. We can look at those things that God has done in the past, that God has done for those heroes of the faith. And because we see God's power, we can see what He has done, and we see that they had faith in God. They believed that God could do what God said He would do. And God did it. And the writer of the Hall of Faith, the writer of Hebrews, includes their stories for that very reason. Because they believed God would be faithful to carry out the powerful acts that He did. The third thing that we see as we look at these passages, as we look at the Hall of Faith and these sections of Scripture that we've brought up this morning, is we see the results of faith. The result of faith is primarily obedience. The result of us having faith will be obedience. You see, faith is more than just believing. I read about people saying that Christianity is just believing something. It's just blind obedience, blind acceptance. But the fact of the matter is that there is more than just believing that is involved in obedience. It's not just that I believe something, but that once that belief is there, there is obedience that follows. Now, sometimes that's acting upon just a general command. You look at the stories that the writer of Hebrews includes, and he gets to the point at the end of the period of Joshua, and he comes to the period of Judges, and he says, but I can't explain all of them. And one of those that he includes there is Gideon. Now, the story of Gideon is something we don't have time to get into all of, but if you look at the story of Gideon, and you go back to Judges, you read the story of Gideon, what you find is that Gideon had 30,000 men. And he comes, he gathers this army of 30,000 men. He's still outnumbered by the enemy, but God says to him, I want you to do what I told you to do before. And so, if you look back to Moses telling the people about when they would get ready to go into battle, one of the things that Moses told them to do, God told them to do through Moses, was the first thing you do is you say, if any of you are afraid, go home. Just if you're afraid, just go home. He also said that if you're newly married or if you've just built a new house or a couple of other things, that if you've just done those, you send them home too so they can enjoy the married life for a year. They can enjoy their new home. They can enjoy those things. God said those are the things you do. And those are general commandments that God gave to the people of Israel. And God reiterates that general command to Gideon. And He tells Gideon, you say, first of all, to these 30,000 men, if any of you are fearful, turn around and go home. And it says that day, Gideon's army was depleted. They're like one-tenth of Gideon's army is left. And God says, just act upon the general command. But then God, in the same account, if we look at continue looking at Gideon and thinking about the fact that the writer of Hebrews mentions him, so he wants us to think about him, Gideon then is given some specific commands. He says, okay, now take the ones that you've got and you go down to the water and you watch the ones that scoop up the water and the ones that bend over and lap the water, and you send one group home and you keep the other. And Gideon ended up with about 300 men because Gideon carried out the specific commands. The specific commands also required obedience. Gideon, do you believe that God is going to do what God said he would do? Do you have faith? When Gideon said, I have faith in God, it required obedience. The same thing is true for Noah. Noah, it's not raining, there's no ocean, there's no lake to float this boat on, and Noah continues to build this ark for 100 years. You know, his obedience began when he went out and he felled a tree. And then he felled the second tree, and the third. And then he took some of the trees and he began to heat them up in such a way to get the tar out of them so they could boil it for pitch so they could use it to paint the ark and make it waterproof. Each step of the way, God was telling Noah what to do, and Noah was following the specific instructions because he had faith, and his faith was obedient. And in fact, if you read through the members of the Hall of Faith and you read their stories, you find that one of the things that the writer of Hebrews is doing is pointing out to us that their faith comes to obedience. The proof that they have faith is their obedience to God. Well, faith doesn't just act in obedience, but faith is what makes us attractive. We become attractive when we follow through in faith and in obedience to God. Because the thing is people are going to notice the difference. People could look at the lives of those members of the Hall of Faith and they could see the obedience, they could see, and they became attractive. Now, unfortunately, not everybody is going to accept our attractiveness. Not everybody is going to accept the message that makes us attractive. And that's why the writer of Hebrews can talk about those that were sawn in half and those who wandered around helplessly and aimlessly, those who were treated miserably. Why? Because sometimes when we have faith in God, our faith and our acting upon our faith, well, it draws people's attention to the fact that they're not living up to God's standards. And they like their standards more than God's standards, so treating those who are followers of Christ negatively helps them to continue down the path that they're going down. And we're not the first ones. We may be the first ones to suffer some of the ways we do, but we're not the first ones to suffer for our faith. And in fact, we suffer so very little, it's almost laughable to say that we suffer for our faith. But the truth of the matter is that we can have faith in God, and our faith makes us attractive. Our faith is like a flower that draws people to God. Now, some of them are like the pollinators, and they come and we grow the faith through them. Others of them are kind of like those that are there to stomp out and eradicate the flowers. And well, unfortunately, we suffer, but the faith continues to grow. If you read through the list of names and the synopses of their stories, you will see that these weren't perfect people. They're not in the Hall of Faith because they were perfect people. Rather, they were faithful to God. God then worked through their stories to show His nature. And it is through remembering His faithfulness to them as well as to us that we're able to live lives of faith. In living lives of faith, we're given the opportunity to make His character known and attractive to a lost and dying world. And that's what we're called to do. We're called to let the light shine through us to this world. We're called to be like flowers that attract people to God. And the light shines even brighter in the dark days of our lives. In those times when we're facing difficulties, when we're facing challenges, our light shines brighter as God's faithfulness shines out distinctly through us for a world to see. And as followers of Christ, that's what we're called to do. We're called to show the glory of God to the lost and dying world. And today, if you don't know what that means, if you don't have a relationship with Jesus Christ, we'd love to visit with you. I'd love to visit with you about what that means. If you're ready to make that commitment, that decision, we'd love to celebrate with you in the waters of baptism in that way. But this morning, this is a lot towards those who are already followers of Jesus Christ. And the message is this, is that we are to live lives of faith. Lives of faith that leads to obedience in Jesus Christ so that we become attractive to the world around us and others might come to know Jesus as their Savior through us.